God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the worlds, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world, mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. A conversation with my friend Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. And we were just talking about an ad, really smart ad a company put up, pitching their financial services. And it turned into an amazing lesson about insider trading and how Washington, D.C. is, in fact, a separate country from us. This is part of the conversation. You can see the whole thing on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TheToddHermanShow. So Zach, this is a company that's, let's see, Autopilot. And I'm saying it, join Autopilot. I'm saying it because they did a smart thing. This is a great ad. And here it is. This is someone who looks a lot like, well, I'll let you decide who she looks like.
What is my perfect trade? I get the tip at 3:58. Market closes in 2. Do I buy Apple? Nope. I buy a defense contractor. More subtle. Next day, war breaks out. Stock triples. The ethics committee calls. How did you know? I say, gut feeling. They respect that. As I'm selling, a lobbyist walks in. He says, that was my intel. I say, was it? We spend the weekend at Camp David. No one's there. It's romantic. Monday, market's back in session. I tell him to meet me in the Caymans, but I go to Switzerland. I don't trust him. Besides, tax laws are better. 30 years later, I get a letter. I have a son. He runs the SEC. This is where the story gets interesting. I tell the lobbyist to meet me at the Lincoln Memorial, midnight. Turns out he's been following my trades for years, through Autopilot. It lets you invest like a politician, without marrying one. He says he needs one more tip. I don't care. I don't show up. Flew to Singapore. That's where I set up the shell company.
Is that the most gorgeous ad for a financial company that you've ever seen?
That's brilliant. It's brilliant. I love it. It's absolutely brilliant.
And
the funny thing about it is, I don't think it's, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's some embellishments, but I don't think it's that far off. It's not that far off.
I don't either. And even the part about the kid, and there's no proof that this person who looks a lot like, what's her name? From San Francisco, and she's got like a $250 million net worth.
Something like that.
Yeah. Right. The queen of the blow out. During the COVID, where everybody had to wear the mask. Pelosi.
Yes.
Pelosi.
Yes, Nancy. I knew it was something like that.
There's no proof that she has an illegitimate kid from a defense industry lobbyist, but there's no proof that she doesn't. And that's a negative you should have to prove. Is it that murky? Is it that filthy? Because if I'm looking at the net worth of these guys, I'm following their trades, I'm doing the Nancy Pelosi stock picker, would they really do it that obvious that every single human being can see it?
What I can tell you is that if we put up similar returns, we'd have the SEC all over us.
Is that true? Is that true?
Yeah. And here's the thing people need to understand about investing. And when you say stuff like this, people are kind of like, well, you don't know that. When you look at somebody that generates the kind of returns that these people do year in and year out in excess of market returns, one of two things has to be true. These people are either on the level of a Stan Druckenmiller, a Buffett, or like Jim Simons at Renaissance Technology, which, you know, I just described three of the best people to ever manage money in history. Mm-hmm. Or it's fraud.
That's pretty simple.
Just plain and simple. And a good analogy of this, a good way to understand this is, one of the hallmarks of Bernie, Bernie Madoff. One of the hallmarks of that whole deal, it wasn't the amounts that he was making. It was the lack of volatility, the smooth returns. Now their returns aren't the same, but I'm using this as an analogy.
And he was a pyramid scheme guy, like a legit pyramid scheme.
Yeah, his was just straight fraud. I mean, straight Ponzi scheme. Like, it wasn't even investing the money in the things he said he was investing it in. But the way you could tell is when I look at returns, I can't just look at somebody's returns automatically and go, okay, that's fraudulent. But when I look at the returns and I don't see any volatility, that is a tell. Okay. And why? Because, you know, look at a company like Nvidia when it went on its great run.
Yeah.
Okay. It had days where it got smacked. It had weeks where it was down 10, 15%. Right. And yet you go to the end of it. And if you held on that whole time, you made a pile, right? Those types of there's no trader in the world that can anticipate that type of volatility on a daily basis, right? So when you see smooth returns, the same is true when you see somebody that doesn't have like, for instance, they're not somebody like Stan Druckenmiller that has a history of making these trades and doing these things. They don't have a software setup or a computer setup like Jim Simons does at Renaissance Technology that helps explain that. And yet you've got market beating returns with fantastically timed trades all over the place. If you just looked at that on the surface of it, somebody that knew what they were doing, they would just go, something's off here.
Okay. And now, let me get to a specific here, because I want to make sure people understand this. I know what you're saying is true, obviously, and I know it makes sense, but I want people to understand this. If you and I, let's say that we're down in Mexico together, okay? We're hanging out. Let's say we're having dinner and gentleman sits down and says, hey, mind if I join you, right? And so it's a public place. Hey, yeah, sure, have a seat. We're having tacos. We start to visit and turns out, let's say that he is a pharma exec. You know, so he looks at me. I'm suddenly suicided. Sorry, I mean, not really, because, you know, pharma loves me. But let's say we sit and listen and he says, yeah, you know what? I work for a pharmaceutical company A. You know, funny thing, on Monday, we are releasing a drug that has been proven to cure lung cancer. And here's the profile, the safety profile. And he says that to us. Now, I could walk out of there, Zach, and I could, I guess, go purchase stock in that company if I believe that what this guy's saying, and I'm okay. But if you went back and as a fiduciary and a fund manager at Bulwark, if you started to use that inside information, are you at that point in trouble, or is that casual enough that you're okay?
What did he, so remind me, did he give me any material information?
Yes. So he said, we're releasing this on Monday. Here's the safety profile, some of the testing. Let me show you on my phone and hey, I'll text you some things and you can look at it yourself.
You and I can't do that.
Wait, I can't?
Both get in trouble. No, nope.
Just a dude from Idaho with a podcast and a couple of national radio shows. I can't.
Yep. The second that news release is out, you can act, but not 1 second prior to that.
Wait. I thought that applied to you, but not just ordinary Joe that I happened to come across something. Okay. If I'm on an airplane and I'm sitting next to that guy and he's not good at OPSEC and he's working on stuff and I happen to look over an eagle eye and I'm spying and I realize, oh wow, that drug's coming out Monday. They have a press release. That safety profile looks solid. If I took that and bought it, then I'm just a spy and I'm okay because he didn't give it to me. No, wait.
Illegal.
No, it's not.
Yep.
That's
because it's non-public information.
That's illegal?
Yeah. Well,
they do this. They're told these things.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Look, and we've got all the transcripts and the proof. Remember, it's the people coming out of the banking committee meetings in 2008, 2009. And within 5 minutes of leaving the banking subcommittee meeting, they're all selling their financial stocks, right?
I've told the story very often, so I'll give the short version. I was in D.C. and Barney Frank, Congressman Frank, was giving a speech before me. Congressman Frank was asked a question. It was to D.C. power brokers, comms guys, VP comms, spin doctors, PR firm heads, journalists, and someone raised their hand and Frank called on them and he said, yeah, Congressman, there was discussion this morning about Greek bonds in committee. Can you tell us where that went? Barney Frank. I can't really disclose that information. It's part Fauci, part Barney Frank. I can't really, you know, disclose that, but I would say this. If I were a rich man, I would be buying Greek bonds because as of about a half hour ago, Greece is officially too big to fail. He says this, I get up and my friend Trevor had me there and I get to the microphone. I've got my BlackBerry out and I go, I'm so sorry. I know this is very, very rude. I'm so sorry. I apologize. Typing away. I'm sorry. Just one more minute. Okay. All right. I just bought Greek bonds. Let's hear it for Insider Trading and Congressman Barney Frank here, everybody. Insider Trading and Congressman Frank. And the room starts to applaud, and Barney Frank is in the back of the room, and he gives me the... And
no way.
Yeah. He gives me the... Oh, he hated my guts. I confronted him another time because he was triple parked because he was going into a liquor store, and he told me F off because I said, hey, Congressman, you're blocking the little people getting to work. You're triple parked. So he's in the back of the room, and the room is legitimately applauding. Let's hear it for Insider Trading and Congressman Frank. And then they're applauding, and somebody goes, idiots, he's making fun of us.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if I would have got flipped off by Barney Frank, I would have hoped somebody would have caught it on film because I'd have taken that image and put it on a T-shirt and worn it with pride. I got flipped off by Barney Frank. I would have been proud. That's a badge of honor, my friend.
Well, I thank you for that. And my friend Trevor wasn't a fan of what I did, but they were applauding it. So, okay, Zach.
So let me throw something. I'll give you a real life scenario exactly okay. What I'm talking about. So just to give you an idea of how this is looked at. Okay, so one of our traders during 2022 when rates were going up and the market was getting cracked. And one of our traders came to me and said, hey, my dad's account is with us. We want to make some very aggressive short bets against this market. And I said, okay, we'll put him on the phone. So I talked to the dad and I said, look, you understand what the trades you're making. You could lose everything. And he goes, yep, we know. And to be fair, my trader is very experienced, very good trader, you know, so, but they were doing some risky stuff.
Yeah.
He's a very good trader. And in the space of 8 months, ran his dad's account from about 250 grand up to like 1.3 million. Okay.
Wow.
We got investigated for over a year for that.
For that.
Over, and it got flagged because of the gains, right? The outsized gains in one account, not in my personal account, not in my family's accounts. And it literally was stuff that when you looked at the trades themselves, it was impossible for us to do anything untoward. Like it was impossible. We were trading volatility on the exchange. So no inside information could be had. I got a year's worth of an investigation just on the amount of profit we made in a small account. And that's a $1.3 million account. We managed between $800 and $900 million. So now, am I saying they shouldn't have looked at that? No, I mean, when you see a return like that, I mean, but what I'm saying is they're looking at that in shops that are as relatively as small as ours. And we're not small, but you know, we're right around $1 billion in assets. So we're not a big deal by any stretch of the imagination. But if that gets that kind of consternation, it kind of gives you an idea of how egregious what's happening at DC is.
Oh, I mean, they sit in conferences looking at the minute level of detail of these products and these deals and how many units are going to ship. They're looking at length of contract. Because if they're approving these things, these big international deals, Defense Department deals, pharma deals, anything that's international trade, they're looking down to unit costs. And I got to imagine, there's no way Pelosi's looking at that stuff. She's getting that information. This looks big. You know she's bringing in people to look at this. She's got her chads. She's got her analysts that are looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I knew this was outsized because I remember when I was at Microsoft, I had done some consulting for a company, and I won't mention them, but they had software for making videos easier to see online. So it might be something that you could install on a website, you know, to make it super easy for video to load. And people who know, Microsoft was, they bought them and they screwed the company up, but they bought them. And I'd consulted that company and I got a waiver from Microsoft that I could still be on their advisory board. The second it came out that they were going to purchase that firm, I got a note from legal. You need to sell your shares.
Yep.
Wait a minute. I don't get to take a ride on our, no. No, you need to sell now. So I'm not even, all I am is advisory board, which is nothing.
Yep. Yep.
They have a specific, yep. Nope, you have to sell. And I lost out on a 4 or 5 time value lift on that. Mm-hmm. Right. And Nancy Pelosi and these Republicans who do this, they can have that minute detail trade on time magically. And this is why they gave themselves a waiver to insider trading. Unbelievably 100%. Sick.
Yep.
Again, that was my friend Zach Abraham. He's on my podcast once a week, Chief Investment Officer, Bulwark Capital Management. You can see the whole thing at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TheToddHermanShow. We'll come back and be in the world, but not of it.
USA Today. Did you see it this morning? All the odds against us. Faithfulness is the word.
There's a place for you on the battle line. Engage in the fight for America's families. Visit AFA.net and then take your position. A message from the American Family Association.
Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Next segment, we'll get to a personal note and the Tower of Babbling and a cleanup item. And this is kind of a personal note, it occurred to me. But it is of being in the world and not of it. I don't know that there is a better example of people who are in the world and not of it than people who are willing to talk about the fear of the Lord. This is an unpopular topic. There are not many churches, evangelical or otherwise, who are willing any longer to preach the fear of the Lord. And I talked to 14 and 15-year-old boys about this. I asked them in one of our youth groups recently, why do you think that is? Why do you think that pastors and priests shy away from that topic? And the guy said, almost to a person, that it scares people away from church. And that a lot of pastors want to make sure that they have people in church all the time. And one of the boys said to pay the bills. He said, look, I'm not blaming pastors. They need to pay the bills. And speaking about fearing the Lord doesn't pay the bills. And I think it's a misunderstood topic. And I do think it's complex. And there is an advantage to taking the simple gospel and preaching it simply, and that is that Jesus Christ died for our sins. He paid a debt we couldn't pay. Without him, we have no hope of eternal life. Without him, we have no hope of a fruitful life in any eternal sense. Without Jesus, we are not living as we were designed. We were designed to walk with God. Jesus is our second chance to do that, to have the Holy Spirit within us, to walk closer to the garden than we'll ever have until we get to the new heaven and the new earth. There's a lot of reasons to want this now, and it's not just the reward of eternal life. It's this life. It's being able to parent our kids as God designed, to honor our marriages as God designed, even marriages that go through tough seasons. Well, in fact, you know what? Especially those marriages that go through tough seasons. But as I was speaking to the boys, and this got cut off the other day, I started to discuss this on a personal note, and it was my fault. I was enjoying discussing it with you. And I actually adopted a relaxed body position, and I kicked a power cord, We went off the air for a bit. Totally my fault. Not Randy's, not AFR's, mine. My silly mistake, and I've rendered that impossible. I've secured the power cord to the wall. Even if I try to flee, if there's a fire, I can't leave. I'm kidding. I could get out, but... So I wanted to give this, I think, the treatment I feel I need. It requires. So I'm not saying that either of the two people I'm going to describe here are God. I'm not saying they compare to God. I'm going to describe two personalities I feared for different reasons. One was a wrestling coach I had who, by all accounts, has changed. I saw him long ago and got to speak with him one-on-one and got to tell him what I thought of him as a wrestling coach at the time. And he was apologetic. He, in fact, was very vulnerable with me. He said I was going through a tremendous bit of pain at that time in my life and I didn't deal with it well. He was very, really honored the conversation. I want to make that super clear. Praise God. Okay, so I'm not going to name him on the program. The people who know me know who I'm talking about. But at that time in his life, he was this sort of man that when I got into high school wrestling, I was not as aggressive as he would have liked. And in fact, I made a premium out of trying to be friends with guys I wrestled against. Because I tried being the bully in junior high wrestling. It didn't work. You know, when I was winning matches, I tried to intimidate guys. I did that into my sophomore year, and I felt like a jerk. Because the guy actually beat me, because I thought I had him beat, because I was staring him down. He beat me, humiliated me. He'd never beaten me. He never beat me again. It was God. I'm sure it was God going, oh my gosh, you're going to sit here and stare this guy down. So I stopped doing that. Praise God. So this wrestling coach was frustrated by this. And one night after practice, I'm a sophomore. He's a guy who won a bunch of college matches and was a finalist a bunch of times for national championship. He shut the doors. He told me to stay behind practice. He shut the doors. He turned off most of the lights and then just had like one light on that was like a spotlight. And he wrestled me and he just beat the garbage out of me. And doing everything he could at every single moment, anytime he had me on the floor, he always was going to cut off the air supply. He kept saying things like, man, I can't breathe. Can you breathe? Man, you don't sound good. I think you're going to die. I don't think you can breathe. Are you having a heart attack? I think you're going to die. And he was doing this to me. And I actually got scared. I thought I was going to die. So I kind of wigged out physically and fighting for my life. And I think he may have let me up, or maybe I just burst of adrenaline, extinction burst. And he goes, there. See, that's what I want to see. There. Was that hard? This is a guy who made me wrestle with walking pneumonia. And I'm saying I had a temperature of well above 101. And my mom and dad are saying, you're wrestling? I said, he's making me. And I wrestled a kid who was not a good wrestler, but a great athlete. In his defense, he'd only started wrestling in the last 2 years, and I'd wrestled most of my life. Great football player, great athlete. And so I couldn't breathe. And my only hope was to take this guy down and to pin him. That was it. All my friends said, just throw him. He doesn't know how to counter a basic throw. Just throw him. So I did that in the most basic throw in all of wrestling, a lateral drop with no hip toss. Put him on his back, and I think, oh, thank goodness, okay. And then I hear my coach on the corner of the mat. Todd Herman, let him up. Todd Herman, let him up. He was making me let the guy up. I did it again. I took him down, put him on his back, let him up. And at one point, the guy's wrestling, and I remember his name, great guy, he got a bloody nose. So the match should have stopped, but it did. It stopped for a bit. I mean, it shouldn't have stopped, but it stopped, and they put some cotton in his nose. And I was coughing into a towel with brown stuff and a little blood from my throat, not my lungs, but from my throat coming up. And I went back out, and everyone could see I couldn't breathe. So I threw him as fast as I could to his back. My coach was yelling, let him up, let him up. I didn't. The ref put his hand up to signal the pin, to slap the mat. He slapped the mat, and at that second, a rolled up towel hit the ref. My coach had surrendered the match. He had forfeited. Now, it didn't get there in time, so I won. Afterwards, he made me run stairs for another hour while the match finished off and made an assistant coach watch, and my friend Dave went and did that with me. Later, he made me wrestle with a broken shoulder. And he blamed me for losing the city championship, even though I didn't lose. I lost the match, but I wasn't pinned. It was a guy I'd never lost to in my life, but I couldn't move my, I don't remember, I think it was my left arm. One of my arms. I was scared of that guy. Really scared. And after that thing with the broken arm, I actually confronted him in his office and actually said something I knew would trigger him emotionally. And he punched a hole in a metal locker, screamed the F word at me, told me to get out before he killed me. Totally feared that guy. I'm not saying what he did was godly. It wasn't. But man, did he have power. I feared that power. On the entire different end of the spectrum, as we're talking about fearing the Lord's powerful. The Lord is always just because he is justice. He is perfectly merciful because he is mercy. He's always kind at the right time because he is kindness. He is wisdom. But man, does he have power. The wrestling coach had no power compared to God Almighty. And I was scared of that wrestling coach. A lot of guys were. Anyone who was honest was scared of him. On the other side of the spectrum, I was blessed to know a teacher I've told you about. His name, I will name him. There's some more flattering things I'm going to say about him. His name was John Trainer. He was a Jesuit-trained teacher and taught in the government schools. Later, he went to a private school, became the headmaster at Gonzaga. He was the only layperson to get a memorial in the Catholic Church here. One of the bishops did the memorial. John Trainer changed thousands, tens of thousands of lives, hundreds of thousands probably. And he was a very kind teacher who knew how to handle someone like me who could be a little bit rebellious. I grew to call him the Monsignor. He did countless things to me, acts of kindness, but they were acts of teaching. I've told you some of the stories. I'll just tell you one so you get a flavor of who this guy was, and then I'll tell you the story to compare to Rick. There was a kid in my class who was a very strange kid. It occurs to me now he was probably autistic. And I was deeply, deeply, deeply infatuated in a teen sense with this girl named Rochelle, happened to be a black woman, black girl at the time. And others never, we were never going to date. She had a boyfriend who was in college who was actually, to my annoyance, a great dude. And we're in class, and this student, we're talking about social groups. This student said, raised his hand and goes, yeah, what about the coloreds? And he sat in front of me, and I pushed him. Colored people, like, you're insulting this girl. I pushed him. And that gentle teacher, John Trainer, put his hand up. He says, Todd, one moment. He said, Rick, to the student, what color? Oh, black people. Oh. Well, perhaps Rochelle will correct me, but I believe black people prefer to be called black, not colored. Is that right, Rochelle? She said, it is for me. And Rick turned around and apologized. So brilliantly done. Later, Mr. Trainer put Rick into a group with me. We were in the library doing a project. He put Rick on my team. And everybody knew I would lead the team because I was that way, sadly. And I gave everybody a job. And I told Rick, your job is to guard the table. So that's what I did. I just embarrassed this boy, had him guard the table. I got up and I was walking away, and Mr. Trainer said to me, pardon me, Todd, will you step over for a moment? I said, yes, Monsignor, hi. He said, come here. And he said this very quietly. Todd, do you think at some point in his life that student Rick will have suffered enough pain and embarrassment? So I said, you're right. I'm sorry. And I went back and said, hey, Rick, I was just kidding, man. You're with me. And I am embarrassed to say that thrilled him because I was a jackass. John Traynor became my student advisor for a speech I was honored to give. I was elected class speaker because I wasn't going to make valedictorian or salutatorian. It was the first year they did this, an elected class speaker. I wrote a speech, and I got to give that speech in front of a group of students and my staff advisor. There were teachers there, and John Traynor was my staff advisor. And there were some funny jokes in there. I made some fun of some teachers who had become friends. I'd become friends with, and it was good natured. And I made fun of some teachers I was not friends with, and I savaged them and the school system. And afterwards, John Traynor asked me to meet privately with him. And he said, may I have your speech? I handed it to him. He stamped it approved, signed his name. He said, your speech is approved as is. Now, Todd, I have a question for you. You said a lot in there that's true about the school system and about some of my colleagues. Some of it was very funny. Some of it was very cruel. My question for you is, do you want to be right or effective? I'll let that sit in your mind for a bit. You decide. If you choose to change the speech, I imagine it would be better. But it's approved. I did not spend even 10 minutes thinking about this when I decided to change the speech. Why? Because I feared him. More importantly, I feared losing his love. Now, we can't lose the love of Jesus. I feared something else. Mr. Traynor put his reputation on that piece of paper. He approved my speech. If I had done what I intended to do, it would have embarrassed Mr. Traynor. His colleagues would have said, John, how did you improve that? I'm so hurt. I couldn't. Because I feared disappointing John Traynor. In a way far more profound than fearing taking a beating from my wrestling coach. Even though he could deliver a life-ending beating. God is mercy and kindness and wisdom. And we should fear him for his immense greatness, his majesty. Oh, and yes. Yes, he can be a God of swift justice. So the fear of God should be a complex thing and a sacred thing. And a thing the church is more willing to discuss on a regular basis. If we don't do that, we're stealing from God something we owe him. We'll come back on the Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We'll get to our babbling here today and personal notes. And by the way, a note about the personal notes. I'll share that with you here in a second. It's been a segment we've done for a long time, and I have a note about that. Let me just get to this. This goes to the heart of something we talked about in the first segment. If you didn't hear it, I had a discussion with my friend, Zach Abraham, who comes on my podcast nearly every Friday. Zach is a very, very close friend. He runs a company called Bulwark Capital Management. He is the chief investment officer there, fiduciary. He's a very good Christian man. He has a website, knowyourriskradio.com. It's not an ad. I'm just telling you where you can learn more about Zach, knowyourriskradio.com. And we talked about insider trading. And I was aware of some of this, but did you know, I was not aware of this. Did you know that you, if you were sitting in a, I don't know, a Waffle House, and you found yourself overhearing a conversation between two pharmaceutical executives, and those pharmaceutical executives were talking about things that are not public knowledge about a drug launch coming that Monday. Say this is Sunday after church. And they're going through some details about this drug launch, and it's the most successful thing they've ever had. They've got reporters lined up. They've got embargoed stories, meaning the reporters have the stories written. They're gonna drop on Monday. If you overheard that conversation, no fault of your own, they were just speaking too loudly. And if you went and bought that pharmaceutical company's stock and someone found out you did that and could prove it, if you did it based upon that knowledge, you could go to prison. But not a congressman or woman or senator who sits on committees and looks at the deal points, looks at the specifics of shipping stuff like that out of the country, approvals, FDA reviews, and has the details on those companies. They can purchase that stock and not go to prison, and you can't. You could be sitting on an airline, I mean, in an airplane, and not minding your own business and reading someone's documents, seeing the same thing. Again, if you traded stock based upon that and that was proven, you could go to prison, but Nancy Pelosi can't, and they regulate these industries. So when I tell you that Washington, D.C. is a separate country, I'm not being hyperbolic. It's a separate country with their own rules, and we are the little people who only get to live by little people's rules. Now, that's all to get to this this cleanup item before we get to the tire babbling and a personal note and a note about the personal notes. This is from Fox News, and it is a report from Team Doge, Elon Musk group, on some of the things they saw and overheard while working in government.
I overheard a contractor tell one of her colleagues to falsify billable hours by creating a PowerPoint to mask a delay in the onboarding process in front of me. And this is like hour zero at this agency. And so, I mean, this is just a common theme that you take a look at these contracts, you take a look at these grants, and it's veiled in noble rhetoric. You know, it's at the top level. It's
it
like,
sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And then you actually just follow what are the funds actually doing?
Or send us a picture.
Exactly. And
the send us a picture request is incredibly good. Like Pixar didn't happen. And then they're like, and it wouldn't be that hard to just, frankly, they could search for some fake pics on the internet or get AI to generate the pics, but they don't even bother doing that.
So you caught them cold billing fraud.
Oh, I caught them, her advising her colleague to do this because it takes a few days to onboard. So that is being investigated right now.
That is a culture. I mean, that's the result of a culture of untouchability. You know, Dan Crenshaw, Nancy Pelosi, insider trading, obviously. Nancy Pelosi's wealth base is from that. And with all that information, all that detail, they don't face prison time, but you and I overhear a conversation, we face prison time. If we, in an IRS investigation, falsified records, like you just heard this description from the Doge team that they saw, we'd go to prison. In all likelihood. So when I say it's a separate country, Washington, D.C., understand, I mean it because of dynamics like that. On this program, we thank the Lord, though, for placing supposedly wise people, like the people who, right now, think they have all this power over us in our government. The Lord has placed them on tall towers, or allowed them to be in the tall towers, but the towers are shaking sand. And so we thank the Lord for that in this feature we call the Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents the Tower of Babylon.
It is not a criminal violation to enter the country illegally. It's not a criminal. It's a crime. It's not a crime.
Three sound bites in today's Tower of Babylon. Beginning here with a woman who has found a very, very, very savage thing she's going to be forced to do. She says it's exploitation.
I've got $87,000 of student loans, and now the government is like, pay up, no mercy, no support. This country sets us up for failure. They handed out student loans to 18-year-olds with no real-world guidance. It's not justice. It's exploitation.
No, see, it's not. It's exploitation if you force people to take out the loans or force people to work. It might be fooling you, but you as a grown person decided to sign a contract and what you want is for me to pay for that or for listeners to this program to pay for that. Next soundbite in today's Tower of Babbling. This is Reverend Elizabeth Riley, an Episcopalian priestess, what she calls herself. She has a profoundly hot take for Christians.
Christians. If you are okay with God being three people in one, but you're not okay with people being transgender, I really think you need to examine those two things together.
Okay, let's do that. God has always existed, always will exist. Exists outside of time and place and outside of any and all limits. Human beings don't. That was super hard. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. California State Senator Scott Weiner, the most perverse, openly perverse, openly spiritually fallen, lustful, victim of spiritual warfare in all of government, says that the sex offender registry is a tool of punishment used against the LGB and so-called T community.
We know that the sex offender registry contains a massive array of crimes, including, I don't know, having sex in a car or in a park. That gets you on the sex offender registry. We also know that LGBTQ people have been massively and disproportionately targeted and subjected to being slammed onto the sex offender registry. That's the whole history of the sex offender registry. So this aspect of the bill is incredibly overbroad and discriminatory.
This is the same man, Scott Weiner, in California, who passed into law a bill that made it easier for grown men to inflict their sexual lust upon the bodies of boys. He is the same guy who has said that an effort to once again make it a felony to purchase the bodies of children for your sexual lusts. He says that really what that's going to do is stop 18-year-old high school students from paying 17-year-olds to mess around sexually. Like I said, the most spiritually fallen and tragically, tragically perverse government official in the state of California, and that's saying a lot. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I'm just following my orders here.
On a Disciple's View.
So on a personal note about the personal notes. I've been having some conversations with some friends of mine who say, hey, you know what? Your personal notes sometimes veer into arrogance and pride. Okay. Don't want that. And the very nature of the personal note that I started all these years ago was that I didn't have material ready for the fourth segment of my program last hour in Seattle. I did, what did we do? 3 hours there? That's right. And so I just started talking. And many times God fills this space. Sometimes it's things I want to talk about and God doesn't fill the space. And maybe that's when the arrogance can come in. So I'm going to be extra careful to make sure that we aren't telling hero story Todd or hero Todd stories. I want to tell stories where it's very evident that God was heroic or that God acted. And if I can't do that, I'll probably stop doing the segment. And so now on a personal note, I was reflecting on something that happened to me where I was a participant, and it would be tempting to see me as the hero in this, not the case. I was playing football, and this was during a two-a-day workout. And I was coming out of, coming off the field. I had my pads off, and I was walking by a school bus, and in it were tennis players. And tennis players, traditionally speaking, aren't as big or as maybe violent as football players. And they were, there's loud ruckus on the bus, and that wasn't usual for tennis buses. And so I was kind of curious what was going on. And I looked in there, and they had a kid I'd gone to school with since kindergarten. And they were belittling him. So there was another school's bus, another school's team, and somehow they'd gotten Chad on this bus. And they were doing what's called pantsing him. So taking his pants off to humiliate him. And I went onto the school bus. And so here comes a sweaty, muddy. Well, it wasn't muddy because it was hot, but dusty to them in comparison to them, really big linebacker onto the school bus. And I said, hi, Chad. And said to the guys who were touching him, let him go. And I said, who started this? I was looking around in the bus. Who started this? He is my friend. Who started this? And the faces are blank. As I recall, I had these leather fingerless gloves on my hands because when I wasn't linebackering, I was a center. And those are useful as a lineman. So I'm probably that added to the intimidating look. And there were some boys who kind of sheepishly raised their hands. And, oh, by the way, they've been trying to make Chad sing while they were taking his pants off. This is tennis shorts. They're trying to make him sing. Chad Husky was a lovely singer. So they raised their hands. Says, stand up. Come up here. And they were shaking. I would have been too. These are, you know, much smaller kids. I started to walk up there. And Chad put his hand on my shoulder. He said, don't hurt them. I said, but Chad, he goes, Todd, please, please, I'm begging you, don't hurt them. Okay, Chad, I won't hurt them today. And so I turned around and said to the tennis players, never do this again. You're getting away with it today because of Chad, but not next time. And so we walked off the school bus. And I did not realize the significance of what Chad said after we walked off the school bus and walked inside the school. And I said, why did you do that? And Chad said, well, they don't know what they're doing. He meant they know not what they do. He just knew that I was biblically illiterate. I wouldn't have understood. They know not what they do. Because of his actions and the way he acted, there was a rumor that he was same-sex attracted. He's a man now with 5 kids and something like 25 grandkids. They know not what they do. And every time I think about that, I think how I ripped myself off. What a fool. What a fool I was to not look at who Chad was and to say, I want to be more like that. Because even at that age, he was more Jesus-like, well, far more than me. I didn't know what I was doing. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Until God gives us permission to speak again together, may his peace, which transcends all understanding, wash over you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman, and this has been A Disciple's View.